morning, everybody.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello. Very excited. So many people are here. This session was lovely. Thank you for being here. You know the drill. For the ones that haven't been, we have a wonderful speaker, and then we have little evaluation sheets on your seat. So please, please fill them out for us at the end of the session. It helps us for the next year to determine what was really well received and how we want to go on with the educational programming. That said, we're extremely excited to have Kathleen Johnson here with us, and she will speak today on, as you can see, how to bring youth into our business and how to connect the different type of, you know, youth travel with what we're doing. And I think we can really learn from each other, because not all of us have having to do with youth travel and all of that. So we're very excited about that. And thank you for being here, Kathleen. So for anybody who doesn't know Kathleen, Kathleen Johnson is the president of Kathleen Johnson Tourism Consultants, LLC, and she's one of the foremost authorities on travel and tourism marketing and communications. She created the travel and hospitality practice at Edelman, one of the largest, or the largest PR firm in the world, and through her 25-plus year career there, has made that specialty area into the number one tourism practice among all independent PR agencies. She has developed marketing campaigns for countries including the United States, Mexico, Brazil, and for a wide variety of airlines, hotels, tour and transportation companies and associations. Kathleen also served as Senior Vice President of the Marketing for the Hawaii Visitor Bureau, and in that position managed all of worldwide functions for the Bureau. Kathleen is has taught tourism and public relations at the American University of Paris, DePaul University in Chicago, and has been guest lecturer at NYU and Roosevelt University Hospitality Schools. And we are extremely happy to have you here and speaking to us on this exciting subject.
Thank you
so
very much. Well, good morning, and thank you all for coming. I really, I didn't expect a big crowd this morning, and so I'm very happy to have you here. And you can take my picture from the front row. Isn't that good?
I'll fix it.
Okay. Good. Well, this morning we're going to talk about, the generation that many of us love to hate. The millennials. But what we're going to see, I think, this morning is that they are surprisingly like those of us who are in the baby boomer generation or the Gen X generation. We all kind of grow up and out of many of the things that we do that aggravate each other. But one of the things that I think is really important about looking at one generation is to look at the generations that surrounded them. And let me see if this works. Okay, we're gonna do it this way. So I want to take a look at the generations that came before the millennials and the ones that are coming up after them, so that you can see not only the statistics about age, but about the culture and about the psychology and what how they came to be who they are today. So we're gonna start with my favorite generation, which is the one I am part of, and that's the baby boomers. And those are the people born between 46 and 64. So let's see. Yeah, surprisingly, a lot of baby boomers, but that's because there's a lot of us. You know, we were the generation that really gave rise to the whole idea of group travel. So so we have to be revered and respected. Right? Right. We comprise 24% of the population, so we're still a big part of the population, a big part of the travel population. It's estimated that there are 73 to 77 million of us still hanging around in the U.S. We know how to spend money. We're the ones that really gave rise to the capitalist society in the United States, and we know how to spend, and we actually know that we are about to inherit a lot of money, some of us, not all of us, from our parents, you know, trust funds, et cetera. So there's gonna be a lot more baby boomer spend in the future. But according to the research also, 10,000 of us are turning 65 every single day. And a lot of us, though, myself included and some other people I see in the room, we're not giving up. We're still working. We're still in the workforce. And that could be why the millennials are pretty ticked off at us a lot of times, because we won't get the hell out of the way. So, but we're hanging in there. We also, who are we? Well, we were born in the age of Camelot. We were optimistic. We were the people who thought that we were going to change the world. And who does that sound like? The millennials. So we were a lot like they are now. And we grew up with the Beatles. We grew up with peace and love. But we also grew up with the Vietnam War. So we also had a lot of heartache. And a lot of what happened to us in the peace and love generation led to a lot of divorce, a lot of turmoil. And so that gave rise to Generation X. Those were the kids that Generation X. Okay, let's see who else in the room is between 66 and 80. Okay. Makes sense. Because this is a group that's actually smaller than the two groups that bookend. They are also called the unsung generation, because if you ever try to do research on Generation X, it just isn't out there. They were really not studied the way that boomers were and the way that millennials are being studied now. So they account for 25% of the population, however, 30% of the purchasing power. And when you think about them right now, they are, because they were born in that latchkey generation, they are very, very focused on family. And they are the progenitors of family travel. So you'll find a lot of Gen Xers are part of that big trend. And by the way, Gen Xers, I am told, have the greatest bullshit meter of any generation. So I challenge those of you in the millennial and the Gen X to, you know, challenge everything that I'm saying. So, but who are they? Well, A, they had some of the worst fashion in and some would say some of the worst music, but I know you would all fight me on that.
No, right? No.
But they were also the first generation to pick up a mouse. They were the ones who were introduced to the Apple, and they were the ones who started the whole idea of booking, planning, looking online for travel. But they suffered a lot of loss as well. They suffered a lot of loss in the Gulf War, made them very fiscally conservative during the dot-com boom and bust. So they pulled back a lot. They're more. That's why they're more conservative, a little bit more skeptical of what is going on in the world. Then we have the generation we love to hate, the millennials. How many millennials in the room? Oh, they're all sitting on that side. You need to go over there. Okay, I promise this is not a millennial bashing session. This is really, there's more and more that we're learning about the millennials, and they are a very, very, very interesting generation. They are 92 million in the U.S. alone, and they are also, get my statistics straight, they are like 30% of the global population. So that's a lot of people that we can look at in terms of traveling in the future. 21% of the discretionary consumer spending. I've looked at a number of studies to put this all together. I see anywhere from 2.2 billion to 1 trillion in discretionary spending. So point being, nobody really knows how much they're spending, but they're spending a lot. They also represent, by 2025, you will be 76% of the workforce. So you're going to have a big, big influence in how we do business. And so we, those of us who are in the other generations need to look out, because you're going to be the boss. I think the most important thing, and you're going to hear this throughout my talk, is that we cannot lump them together. They are not kids anymore. I started doing talks on millennials about 7 to 8 years ago, and I always used to say, and the kids did this, and then the kids are going to do that. Well, they're not. You're not kids anymore. 12% of millennials are married with families, and so we have to think of them as a stretching along the age spectrum quite a bit. They're the most diverse generation. 43% are non-white. They are the first generation, though, to be worse off than their parents when they first started out in the world. And that is obviously because the Depression of 2008 hit when they were just about to come into their own and get out of school. And so many of them, you are still kind of snug in your parents' home, unfortunately. It's taking a lot longer for millennials to get out there and buy a house. So, but the good news is that according to MMGY, the tourism marketing firm, and millennials intend to spend 35% more than last year, and they're going to be spending more per person than they have in the past. They, as you can imagine, are so influential partly because they were raised in the seminal moments in time. Remember that millennials were between the ages of 6 and 20 when 9/11 hit us. It changed the world forever, so it's going to change the way they think about the world, obviously. They also are going to be more conservative as a result. But the true distinguishing factor of the millennial for our purposes here today is that they were the first inherently digital generation. They were the first generation to be basically born with a smartphone in their hand. And so information is their stock and trade. And I always think that it's funny. There's not such a distinction between boomers and millennials so much anymore. But I used to laugh at, you go to a dinner table or in your family, and the boomer would say, "What was the name of that? Fill in the blank." And the millennial is immediately on the phone getting the answer. Whereas we boomers would think, "I'll look that up tomorrow." So there's really this, this focus on information and getting information fast that is really important to think about when you think about marketing to the millennial. So that's the most distinguishing factor about them. They are basically, because of this change, because of the fact that they grew up in the digital age, they are alpha influencers. When I first started doing this research, back when I was still with Edelman, we did a study called 8095 about the millennials. And we found that millennials felt, 74% of millennials believed that they were the influencers of the people above them, the people below them in terms of age, and everybody around them. So that's why millennials are so vocal to everyone's marketing efforts, because they influence absolutely everybody. Quick look at what's coming up behind the millennials, the emerging Gen Z. Do we have anybody in the room who's a Gen Z? No. Okay. That's okay, because the Gen Zs are really not spending the travel dollars yet. They are saving for it, but they are basically going as far as they can and as much as they can on somebody else's dime. So they're traveling with their parents, they're traveling with friends, but they're really not picking up the tab. Now, a lot of the research I'm going to show you today is millennials and Gen Zs, because they are starting to lump them together. But as far as really marketing directly to the Gen Zs, it's going to happen very fast, but the millennials are who you want to look at right now. When we look again at the Gen Z, it's a difficult group to reach. When I say that the millennials are the first inherently digital, Gen Zs are all digital. They think differently. It's so funny, because I've seen babies go up to a television and try to swipe, because they're so, from the moment they're born, they're on a phone, they're on a screen. So this is going to be a very different generation in terms of the way that they think, the way that they plan, the way that they use their online life. We don't need statistics to tell us that the smartphone is their stock and trade. If you look at it, just put it in perspective, most people will spend around 3 to 4 hours on their smartphone a day. A Gen Z will spend 9 to 10, and I even think that that's conservative. So the smartphone is really it. But sometimes how can you blame them for preferring that to reality, because of the fact that they were born in a hard time too. They were born right after 9/11. Think of what they've been seeing ever since they grew up. They've been seeing natural disasters, the tsunami, the earthquakes, etc. fires. They're the generation that has grown up with mass shootings every single day of their lives. So that's why they're becoming increasingly more militant about things. They're becoming more militant, certainly, about global warming. And so their values are really going to be different by the time that they are beginning to spend the money. And when you bring it down to a nutshell, think about what they've seen in politics. They've seen polar opposites. They were born under the first African-American president, and now what they're seeing is the first president who's doing policy by Twitter. So so their look at politics is very, very skewed. Okay, so that's a little bit of background about those generations. So let's take a look now at how I'm probably going to say millennials most of the time, but what we're looking at here is mostly both millennials and Gen Z, because they are very similar. They're starting to blur the lines, because the younger millennials are going to look more like the older Gen Zs. They're going to, a lot of them are going to look like baby boomers and Gen Xers. They're going to be very much the same. So what we want to look at more than the age, then, is the cultural and the geographic differences between these organizations. I am going to show you a number of graphs and slides from the newest research that's come out by SCIFT. Does everybody here know SCIFT? Okay, if you don't, you should. SCIFT.com is probably one of the best sites for data and for information about the travel industry. And they just came out with this Millennial and Gen Z Traveler Survey. And the reason why I love this one and want to give them full credit for it, and if you are intrigued by what I show you today, I would suggest that you possibly get this whole study, because it's the first one I've seen that really covers the world, the international data. So they looked at 1,000 travelers from United States, India, and China, because of that, the big populations, 500 millennial and Gen Zs each from Australia and the UK. So it's really a good look at the very different cultural trends. So let's first look at a little bit of an overview on who the millennials and Gen Zs are. And can you see that okay in the back? Okay, because I'll try to interpret, but so first of all, just in pure numbers of leisure trips, we can see that the travelers from China and India are much bigger travelers. They take a lot more trips a year, and they travel more often. Caveat: this study, of course, was done before the coronavirus. I would take this information to heart, because I think even though we're probably going to see an interruption in travel by the millennials from China for a while, my sense, I don't know if you all agree, but is that they're going to come back with a vengeance. As soon as they are able to travel, they're really going to come back. So you want to take a look at this data and put it into your marketing portfolio. In terms of domestic versus international, as you can see, there's a lot difference between the cultures. Again, the U.S. are very domestic travelers, whereas the particularly the Indian and the Chinese travelers are a little bit more intrepid, so they get out a little bit more. They also travel for a longer length of time, and I think that this is really important for all of you, because it means that they can encompass a number of different destinations within the trip, and so they're not going to just go and stay in one place. One thing that we know about the millennials, too, is that they like to do a lot and pack it into a short period of time, so they're not going to necessarily, like, boomers, the trend now, boomers in particular, love to rent houses and stay for a long time and become part of the local culture, but boomers, millennials and Zs, they still want to see it all. I think of them, it's the new version of us boomers, if it's Tuesday, this must be Brussels, we did it on a motor coach, and we did it, we got around as fast as we could and didn't stay very long anywhere. The millennials and the Zs are doing that to a certain extent, but they're doing it very differently, too. I think this is really important for you, too. They do not like to repeat their visits right now. They are not going to be repeat visitors. So when you look at your marketing data and you see that you're not getting repeats, in the millennial generation, don't beat yourself up just yet, because they're still exploring the world. So they're not going to go back to one place over and over again until they really see more. And then I thought, how many of you are in the hotel business, the accommodation business? Okay, this is interesting for you because they're very budget conscious, you know. So you'll see that a lot of them are spending between $50, $125 on a per night spend. The bigger spend, again, obviously, mm-hmm. China and India. But millennials are still very budget conscious. They, of course, need to be. They're still in the very beginning of their career. And also, this I find very interesting. The millennials and the Zs are much more prone to using alternative accommodations. I think this is interesting for the hoteliers to put in your back pocket, because boomers are less likely to use an alternate accommodation than a millennial or a Gen Z. They're a little more intrepid, and again, China and India are leading the pack. So you'll see the theme here throughout this data is that China and India, and I think by extrapolation, you can think the other Eastern cultures are going to be much different in terms of their trends and habits than the Western cultures. So what we need to think about is that even though the age differences are obvious, we're really in a generation mashup when it comes to culture and preferences, because again, the boomers are traveling with the millennials because it's their grandkids. They're going to take their grandkids on a family trip. The Gen Xers are going to take their kids and their grandkids. So there's a big, big mashup in terms of what these different generations are looking for. So think of the distinctions, but really I think what's much more important is to think about what we all have in common. I think it's going to be much more beneficial for you as travel providers to think about what we can do together, and this seems to be a theme of what I've heard and seen so far at the conference, is collaboration and cooperation, because we really need to come together to satisfy what they are all looking for. But here's the good news. The good news is that IITA, I think, you're so far ahead of the game in terms of what the millennials and the Zs are looking for, because it is all about the experience. That's what every piece of data is telling us about travel. Experiences have become the unifying factor for all of the generations. Now, they're doing it differently. And whereas the boomers and the Xers were a kind of an observational, experiential group, the Zs and the millennials are definitely participatory experience. So I think that this, to me, was such a vivid example of that. You know, when I was traveling with my parents, we would go to Yosemite, perfectly happy to sit in the car or the motor coach and look at El Capitan and go, oh, wow. Well, nope, the millennials are climbing it, and they are climbing it with no ropes, you know, so, and they are also sharing that experience. These guys that climbed El Capitan did the whole thing with the GoPro so that they could share the entire experience. That's the difference these days. So if that's the millennials, imagine what the Zs are going to do. I have no idea. But but the point is that the mantra of the millennial is YOLO. You only live once. Mm-hmm. And that is what they want to experience. And I see all the millennials are nodding their head. In this gift survey, they were asked the question, I look for experiences my family and friends may not have thought of. So that's why and look at how high those percentages are across all of the cultures in terms of finding that new and different thing to do. So we really need to focus in on the experience and how we can attract the millennial in that way. But things have changed. So even though there are a lot of things that are in common, motivations, distribution systems, the planning tools, the values of the millennials and the Zs have changed a lot. And of course, technology is at the core of everything that's changed about these generations. We'll look at the motivations first. Even though the millennials have a reputation for being adventure seekers, what I thought was really interesting, I did a presentation on baby boomers a while back, And I was really kind of shocked to see that the top three motivators for baby boomers, millennials, Gen Zs, et cetera, are the same. And they are rest and relaxation, which I was kind of surprised, getting away and spending more time with family and friends, and then, of course, an experience, some kind of a new experience. Now, the one activity that I see has dropped off of the motivators, which, again, coming up through NTA and the motor coach industries for much of my career, is shopping. Baby boomers used to be major, major shoppers, and we probably still are, except a lot of us are purging it all. But shopping has really dropped below the top three or four. And how many in the retail industry here? So it's not all bad news, though, because what's happening is that they want to shop in conjunction with other activities. And I'm very, very, very excited to see that you guys are all way ahead of the curve, because even if you look at the current issue of Inbound Insider, you know, cover stories all about shopping and about the changes in main streets, et cetera, I think that as long as shopping is combined with festivals or other activities, it becomes very important. You'll see later on that the cultural element of shopping also becomes important. But here we go. Here's the top travel motivators across these five regions. And as you'll see, they're all almost the same, except for China and India. So once again, evidence of that cultural difference. And the Eastern cultures are looking more into learning about new cultures. And that's kind of sad, isn't it? Interesting, but kind of sad that particularly the U.S., you know, we need to learn about new cultures probably more than anybody. And so that's not even on our list. But those are the motivators. And then also, what are people looking for in a destination? And this, I think, is really interesting because, again, this was done before the coronavirus, and safety was third on the list of what Chinese millennials were looking for. I think that's going to change very quickly. But I was really surprised to see that safety was number one for the majority of the cultures. So they're looking for safety, but look at local food. Again, this is an eating and drinking generation. It's amazing. This comes up in all of the data. They're really looking for local food, and except for the Australians. And so I don't know what's going on there. That's their fifth. But really, really interesting to see what they're looking for in a destination. Obviously, planning and distribution is really very, very different. But what we have to remember about planning in particular is that the millennial is the primary planner. And that would extend not only to a millennial and millennial trip, but millennial trip family planning. They are the planners for their friends, their family, their peer group. Their inspiration, and I think this is really interesting too. Friends and family are really the highest inspiration for the millennials. So they're talking to their friends, talking to their family, making plans with each other. And I thought travel-related TV shows, documentaries, and movies, I was surprised at how high that was, and particularly for the China audience. I have to say, I don't have enough insight into that to understand Chinese TV, why that's so important. I don't know. Steve, do you have any thoughts on that?
Not sure, no.
No? Okay. Yes?
I remember years ago when the Japanese market, going back about 15 years ago when the Japanese market was a big market for the United States and Florida, they were the same way. I mean, one of the biggest things that they wanted to see was the Seven Mile Bridge in the Florida Keys because there was a show, I don't know if it was Miami Vice or whatever.
Yes.
It was one of those things, oh my God, we see it on the TV, we've got to go visit it in person.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, one of my clients when I was with Edelman was the U.S., and we did the first international program for the U.S. to the U.K. and the Japanese market. And what we came up with, and I can't believe I didn't remember this earlier, the theme for our campaign was, you've seen the film, now visit the set. And we built the whole campaign around the fact that iconic American movies were what were attracting people to the U.S. So we used Thelma and Louise with that iconic imagery. Godzilla for New York, you know, showing the Empire State Building, etc. So that does make sense.
But it is interesting. And then, you know, obviously, social media, we're going to show a lot more about that. But anyway, friends and family.
So what that tells you is that social media becomes really, really important in terms of being the influencers in travel.
Just a quick
yes.
comment. I'm not sure if I accept that idea about the TV, because the conferences I've attended in China, social media is far more important. Some of the social media platforms have as many as a billion users a day.
And
that's where people do their shopping.
I think you can't also get one study to give you the answers, but it's in yes. Yes, millennial.
Well, I'm Chinese and I'm millennial.
Yes. Oh, we got a double whammy.
The social media is high, but also you have to take in consideration the celebrity plays a really important role for the millennial.
What does?
The celebrities. Like
celebrities,
the stars,
yes.
And,
yes.
There's a lot of reality shows and shows, and we have probably 5 different channels similar to Netflix.
Okay.
And they spend a lot of time on those, and
mm-hmm.
then you know, the people that's going on social media, a lot of times because they saw the celebrity, went to this place at a TV show, and then they follow them on the social media, but it's still related to the show. So.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that.
So that it's
yeah.
not.
Mm-hmm. right. And there's some other data later that's interesting in this area, too, so we'll talk about it some more. But top planning sites, okay? So in terms of distribution, no surprises here. Except I have to notice that China has its own planning and distribution sites that are, and it's so interesting that C-Trip really owns the market. So if you're going to cater to that market, you really have to learn that country's planning sites. But Google, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, Expedia, and Facebook are the top sites. And also, I mean, I'm going to say a few things later about marketing online, because it's the usual suspects that is where all the action is happening. And we'll talk about Twitter later, too, which has kind of dropped off the list of the most important one. Obviously, the primary planning tool for the millennial and the Z is the phone. It is the primary planning tool for the millennial. It is the absolute planning tool for the Gen Z. They are doing absolutely everything on their phone. And we're going to talk later about upgrades on their phone, too, because that's a very important part of this. I just wanted to kind of buzz through these, but I thought it'd be interesting for some of you who are in the air travel and accommodation space. But so you'll see here that when they're booking air, China and India are booking it totally on the smartphone. They are, smartphone only is much lower, but I just think it's fascinating to me how the Eastern cultures really jump out as being so different. The same is true for accommodation planning and booking.
And the booking methods, this is interesting. Third-party websites, India is the highest user of third-party websites when it comes to actually booking. And
India or China?
Pardon?
I think that's China.
That is China. I'm so sorry. Mm. That's China. China's always this one, right? You can't see the colors that well.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you are interested in this presentation, let us know. We're not going to post it on the website because I am using so much from Skift. But and also, if you want to purchase the study from Skift, it's a little bit pricey. But if this is your market, it's definitely worth it to purchase it. And this is different from home, you know. So if this is on their computers, so websites. You know, websites, you'll see again through this data, really, really important. Keep your website up to date. Make sure that it's dynamic. Make sure that your booking links are working. You know, you got it every day. You should be on your website making sure that everything is working. And then in destination, we're going to talk about this again, but I think that this is a huge opportunity for you. When you look at the fact that so many of the millennials are booking directly through the website, through third-party websites, and then also in person, they're doing a lot of booking in destination. So if you're not getting the business, you know, before they come, they might just be booking their accommodation and their air, but they're doing a lot of buying when they're in destination. And then finally, another change in the millennials and the Gen Zs is their values. And we have all talked a lot about the values changing, particularly when it comes to environment. But one thing that is, again, kind of sad is that the millennials are really, really kind of skeptical about the ability for us to change. They're skeptical about businesses, that businesses are being responsible when it comes to sustainability, and they're skeptical about the fact that we can do anything about climate change. Climate change is actually tied with terrorism as the number one concern for millennials. But they're also concerned about safety, which kind of surprised me that, you know, how much they're concerned about safety, social equality, and sustainability. So we really have to make sure that when we are looking at our tours and at our activities and our accommodations, that we're thinking in terms of their changing values. So you'll see here that right across the board, very, very high percentages of the importance of social and environmental issues to the millennials and to the Zs. So I'm going to leave it to Greg to talk more about sustainability, but it's important to know that this is a big, big issue for them in their travel. So what are the implications? We're going to go through this pretty quickly because I think that a lot of this is being covered in other sessions, but it all, of course, starts with product. You all have to look at your product and understand that experiences is number one, that you are combining and connecting experiences. Let's take a look at what are the parts of the travel trip that they most want to splurge on. And again, it made me laugh, but food and drink is the top of the line for everybody in the millennial and Gen Z generation. So just make sure that food and drink is really sort of interwoven in all of your product, and that if you're taking them to Yosemite to climb El Capitan, make sure that they're going to go on a wine tour afterwards or a beer tour afterwards, or that they are going to have an opportunity to see the process of planting the food, harvesting the food, taking it to the table, cooking it. There's a huge interest in the whole spectrum of food and drink. And so it's really important for you to think about that with your product. Events and social experiences are second in most of those. Adventure and adrenaline are third for most of them. So those are the top things that they're looking at. My challenge to you would be always look at your product and make sure that it's different, because let's remember what we said earlier. YOLO, you only live once, so you only want to do one thing one time. You don't want to spend your time going back to do something that you've already done. So I would say look at your product, brainstorm with your competitors. You know, that's something that also is not tolerated by the millennial. And please tell me if you think that I'm right or wrong about this, but I just see that competition is really looked down upon by the millennials. They like to see cooperation for their benefit. So if two competitors can cooperate and come up with something different that's going to benefit them, then they're going to have more respect for you as a company. So it's really important to do a lot of cooperative efforts. Adventure is really, of course, big, but I was a little bit surprised by this one. And again, coming from this industry, organized tour activity was really high for the millennials and the Zs. And I think if I had to posit a theory about that, I think it's because they travel with friends and family, they travel with like interest groups. So it's soccer fans or 80s music fans or whatever. So they like to have someone else find those opportunities and package them together for their convenience. So they don't have to do all the searching. They can find it in one place. So I think it would be interesting to take this statistic and then look at what Julie showed us yesterday. You know, she's got a lot of research about the package travel industry, and look again, because for the first years of talking about the millennials, I talked a lot about the fact that they don't like package tours. And that, you know, they certainly didn't like motor coaches, and so that the herd mentality was anathema to them. But it's changing, in a new way. Yes?
I think the latter is more true to me personally. And my friends, I'm not recognizing that organized tour and activity is what speaks to us. So I think that what you just said is more true. But I think that for the Gen Z, it makes sense because safety and all the other things.
Okay.
And I think that Gen Z are also the generation that are maybe less brave to what we've been, or like to millennials.
Interesting.
Because they are always on their phones. They have social skill problems. So it's those people are less, or like that generation is just less out there in the world. And obviously there are exceptions, but
yeah.
That would be my observation.
Really interesting. Anybody else have a thought on that?
I think also they might like the organized tour
yeah.
activity, but
we're not here.
For them.
I'm sorry, wait 1 second. Can you start again?
For them, not like groups of 50 in a bus, but like a individual groups,
right.
Smaller groups. I think that's probably what they're going towards instead
yeah.
of the traditional big,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I'm one of 100.
I agree. And I also, when I talk to motor coach groups, always, you know, emphasize the need for more things like sprinters and trolleys
mm-hmm.
and smaller transportation options for small groups of people. They don't like to get on those big motor coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's start in the back.
I was just going to bring up VR. I wonder
yeah.
where virtual reality falls into
yeah.
this with our Gen Z. Are they strapping on a screen and looking at El Capitan from there? Been there, done it.
Yeah.
I can answer to that.
Oh, Gary's got an answer.
I can answer to that. I've had a French student group that we've worked with for probably 12 years. And last year, they got to Bryce. And three of the students wouldn't even get off the bus because they were on their phones. And basically they said, we've already seen it.
Wow.
And so here they are coming to their answer at Bryce. So I think
yeah.
virtual reality, especially for some of the natural areas, the parks and stuff, may have a big influence
right.
because they feel they've already seen it.
So what's interesting about that too is I went with a group from CIDA to take some students, underprivileged students, to go to Yosemite. It was the most unbelievable experience because we ran into that resistance, but we got them out, and I can't take credit for this activity, but an idea of the kinds of activities you might have to think about with Gen Zs. We got out and took them on a nature walk, and this was Norm Hall, you know, a leadership trainer from CIDA. And he insisted, and when I say insisted, I mean they fought him hard, but he insisted that they had to walk, I can't remember, 50 yards or something between them. They couldn't walk with their friends. They had to walk individually through the plain right in front of El Capitan. And they had to just listen. And they had to touch things, and they had to feel things. And they were all, I mean, it was so funny. They were like, oh, I can't believe it, I have to do it. And then when we got to the end of it, they, the hardest woman in the group, I mean, she was tattooed and rough looking and pissed off, and, you know, she just went, that was the most unbelievable thing I've ever done. She goes, I can't believe, you know, that I saw X, Y, Z, or, she, you know, she saw a rabbit, and she touched a flower and smelled it, and, I mean, they were completely changed, and these were kids who had already.
And I think it's going to be putting experiences. You can't have. They're not going to go up and look at a viewpoint. You have to have an
yes.
experience with that, so they'll enjoy it.
Immersive. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
From a shopping standpoint,
yeah.
I've been reading some predictions from the International Council Shopping Centers, although it's too early to really tell. But there is a thought process that the Generation Z will come back to, not necessarily a traditional shopping mall, but to a rightly planned shopping destination, because they are getting sick of being on their phone all the time, and they're beginning to miss that human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll ever go back to the mall rat days.
Right.
But you know, we're all hoping that at some point, and I think that could be true for any kind of activity, like what you just described,
right.
is at some point maybe they'll get it into their heads that I really need to experience that attraction, yeah. that interaction, and these people.
And they may get it into their heads, but I think it's incumbent upon you and the industry mm-hmm. to also to provide that for them.
Absolutely.
You know, to let them see what the possibilities are, too. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What I also would be very interested in knowing is who brought up the millennials, what kind of parents, and what kind of parents are bringing up the Gen Z. Because the helicopter parenting yeah. mm-hmm. is having a horrible effect, and that's why people, like children these days, are afraid. I completely believe when you say that they don't want to go out of the bus and go and experience, because they are not used to this. Like when I was growing up, I was just left alone with other kids in the yard, and we would just play. And then my mom just has to see me. That's all. Mm-hmm. And the space is big, and we are running, playing, you know, falling and hurting each other, like ourselves. But that's okay. Yeah, like that's fine. Whereas now it's like I'm up to 14 years of age. They yeah. sit at home, that's and right. then you start talking to them, and nothing is in there. They're on the phones. Mm-hmm. It's just
yeah.
it's
yeah.
Well,
yeah. We all have to hope it'll come back.
It's
around.
Really sad.
It's okay.
At
we
least
used
your
to
parents
say that about the millennials too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exact
exactly.
same thing.
But I think it's funny when you said you get to go outside and play as long as your mother saw you. I mean, we boomers in the room, we went out and played. Our parents never saw us.
Yeah, yeah, never.
But it was a different world. It was a different world. It was a different world. You can't. There are things like what she's saying, the helicopter parent, but you can't blame a lot of those actions because it's a different world,
exactly. right.
and you have to be careful.
Absolutely, I totally agree. Yes,
what I'm seeing, even with the grandchildren, like you said, you went out and played, your parents watched you. We went out, they didn't know where we were. These children have to be entertained by the adults constantly. They don't seem to be able to do that play with other children. They have to be directed. I'm bored.
They're always bored.
And they'll just sit there even as little bitty, the adult is entertaining the child or giving them projects and leading them off. So
but see what an opportunity we have in the industry,
yeah.
right?
Maybe
to
we need
provide
to
those
examples.
And I'm going to just piggyback on that a little. I'm
yeah,
not sure that it's the parent adult that's entertaining them.
I
think it's
that.
The parent.
One sec.
I think it's the parent or adult that's taken this.
The phone, yeah, and giving
it to handing it to that
yeah.
individual.
Yeah.
As opposed to actually entertaining them,
right.
as opposed to the days we used to read to our kids.
Yeah.
Even as a father of a 1 or 2 year old, I might have been reading Sports Illustrated to my 1 or 2 year old, you know, in such a way that might have sounded interesting. But in this day and age, they're just taking, here's the phone.
Yeah.
My 2.5 year old granddaughter can work my damn phone
better than
I can.
We can. Well, this is all good fodder for the millennial and Gen Z psychology course that we'll
yes.
do after this. But we just have a few more minutes, so let me just try to get this out of the way, and we'll do a little. I wanted to look at this again because on the shopping piece, it is about locally made goods. You know, that's one of the big differences, that they will shop, but they want to find sustainable goods, indigenous products, things that are very different than what they can find in the typical mall. So I think it's important to bring those goods into your itineraries and into your malls, etc. And that's the Main Street thing. That's I thought that was an interesting article, because in many communities they are really focusing again on locally made goods. Ties in with the local experience. I don't have to tell those of you in this room how important this is, but one thing I found interesting in the baby boomer research is that millennials and Zs are much more willing and open to having a more in-depth, immersive experience with a local than a boomer will. Like, a boomer will say, sure, I'll have dinner with a local group, but they're not going to stay with them at an Airbnb. They're not going to really dive deep. So there's a difference there as well. Again, I don't think I have to tell any of you this, but anything you do has to be Instagram friendly, because this is really the primary tool for sharing right now, far more than Facebook. As we boomers know, as soon as we got on Facebook, the millennials got the hell off. You know, so so they're looking at Instagram now much more as a communication tool. But and I like to say that this is all sort of it's a virtuous circle, you know, in terms of marketing, because you have to you know, you go on these sites to plan and to book, but then you go back on these sites to share, and that's where the next person comes on to look at your experience and to book. So it really is a virtuous circle, and it's so important, you know, when you're marketing to the millennials that you are thinking about these things so that you're reviewing your distribution channels again. Yes, Jesus.
I think you also have to be aware of what the next platform is that they're jumping on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They'll abandon one as soon as
yes. Exactly.
So now TikTok is the next really strong one that a lot of people are flocking to, and then that's just a video platform, which Instagram does that, but for some reason that's the next thing. That
Whereas YouTube used to be the big one for video now.
And YouTube is so powerful, but they just want to consume these short clips.
Short ones.
Yeah.
Everything's fast. So again, I would, you know, really urge you to look at everything often. That's what I think we sometimes forget. You get your website all redone, and you're so happy, and you walk away, and then boom, the next day there's something on there that's totally passé already. Or in the, for example, when we were talking yesterday about the coronavirus, you know, getting on your website every single day to make sure that you have updated information. And the other thing that is just so important, and we're running out of time, so I'll talk about this later too, but again, just to review, these are also the top planning sites as well as the sharing sites, you know, so it's all kind of the same thing. We'll put TikTok on there the next time, but the top three, I mean, you don't even see Twitter anymore in the top three, which I find is interesting. maybe he is running it, but so these, if you and the marketing folks in the room, you can challenge me on this too, but I would say that in terms of your resources, your marketing resources, really focus on these three. You know, you've got to balance it out with print, etc., but this is where the action is. This is where you should be focusing. This is where they're engaging with social media. It's where they're booking, they're planning, they're sharing. It's all happening there. Reviews, just a word about reviews. I'll get to it in a sec. And you have to look at your reviews, and you have to look at your input from these sites and be responding to them every single day. And what is the most aggravating thing is to try to get a review on a hotel or a tour operator or accommodation, and the last one on there was 2016. You know, because if it's not right up to date, people dismiss it. It's not worth your time even reading. So, as again, you can see, all the percentages are really high, but the Eastern cultures are the highest ones who leave reviews and who look at reviews. So watch that. And again. Places consult. Okay, so this is where we talked about the celebrities and stuff. I thought this was really interesting. Where are they? Celebrity influencer endorsements are way over here. I mean, that's one of the lowest places that people are looking now for recommendations. But friends and family still are first. Online reviews really are second. So, pardon? Okay. So, interesting. Kind of an interesting shift. Yes.
One more thing. If you guys saw the Super Bowl this past weekend, you would have seen that Facebook had ads for their new group option, where there's a new format that they're trying to unroll because the old format is just not sustainable or as sustainable as it used to be. So this could be something new to explore, where you can create a group through Facebook and find people that will join that group. Or go and search out these groups and see what the conversation is within the group, so that maybe you can cater to what these people are offering. So if there's a group for rock climbing or hiking, then you can see what they're looking for and maybe cater in that respect.
Yeah, it's really all about the niche, isn't it? It's as much as you can get down on the niche, you're gonna find your tribe.
And that's important too, because now they're making it easier for you to isolate the kind of people that you're trying to market to.
Exactly.
So they're doing a lot of work for you.
Yeah.
things that recommendation.
So just in conclusion, let me just say that I think, you know, with all of this data, what's really important is to be a partner, not only with your colleagues, but a partner with your client. You want to partner in this transformation that's going on. You want to be involved with them, engage with them in social media. You want to ask them what they're looking for. They need to be a part of it. You know, when you think about the psychology, think about the millennials. They were asked their opinion on everything, right? What kind of juice do you want this morning? Which toy do you want? Everything is about giving the millennial the choice. And they are used to having a choice, and they're used to having input into their future and an input into what they're doing. So I would really urge you, A, if you have millennial employees, which you sure as hell better, because you better have millennials who know how to tell you what's happening in their market, bring them into the circle. Yeah, I mean, the biggest complaint of boomers, right, is that they want to be a vice president from day one. Well, maybe you're not going to make them a vice president, but you want to have them in the circle to make sure that you are listening to what they're saying. So don't dismiss the millennial. Don't dismiss the Gen Z, because they are your customer. They are your partner. They are the people that are going to transform your product and your business in the future. So make them a partner and make sure that you are not constantly hating the millennial and complaining about the millennial, because they know who you are when you're complaining. So that's it. We're out of time. Steve, yeah.
quick question. This year, people under 18 in the U.S., and I think it may have applied to some parts of Europe, will be majority people of color and Hispanics. Mm-hmm. What does that do in terms of this discussion? Because of the diversity is changing as well.
That's fodder for the next one. I mean, it's and interestingly enough, in this survey, which I found interesting because it was the first one that I saw that was international, they really didn't get down into diverse groups. It's more by age and by country, geographic and culture. So, I guess I would say that you have to look at diversity as in the cultural light as well, so that starts to give you a hint. But quite frankly, I'm not seeing a lot of research that is showing the diversity changes and differences.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really big question.
Yeah,
and how to address that. But I'll
stop
agree.
Thank you. Yeah,
I would just say just my thoughts. I don't know whether it's true, but from what I observe, I don't think that the color of the skin matters as much, but I do think that there are cultural habits and cultural tendencies, like, for example, in China, what you were mentioning. I don't see that in Europe, for example. We don't care that much about the TV shows and stuff like that. Like, I lived in Denmark the last 10 years, and I'm a Lithuanian, and we all about, like in Denmark especially, it's all about environmentally friendly, sustainability, nature, meeting people, meeting different cultures and all that. And I have not noticed the difference among the color that I care, whether the skin, or even when I talk to the person who is my age around me, they think the same as I do, or I think the same as they do. And so I think that it's more about, like, culturally, yes, maybe from different places in different countries, but in the United States, I feel like there are a lot of the diversity. We want it. We want everyone to be included. We don't want separation, segregation, and all that. So I think that makes sense why it's eight.
Great. Thank you very much for that insight. Thank you. Well, we could probably talk about this forever, but we're out of time.
Sorry, yes.
So
we
thank
don't
you.
Want to be. This was a very, very fascinating subject and all that, but we have to move on to the next session.
Please
thank you so much, very much. Please,
please
take a couple minutes to give us machines back, and we very much thank you.
Thank you.
That's
thank you.
Excellent.